Pharaoh Khufu intends to secure his riches beyond the grave and into the afterlife. He captures the greatest architect known in his kingdom and forces him, through a threat to his entire people, to build him an impenetrable tomb, a pyramid no thief can plunder. The architect sets to work, knowing that upon completion of the tomb, he himself will be sealed inside with the dead pharaoh. How is it possible to build the most secret catacomb, a labyrinth impossible to breach, without passing on its secret through the workers who build it? In the classic Hollywood film Land of the Pharaohs, such a conundrum is posed. The architect needs a team of workers that Khufu can trust to construct the mechanism by which the tomb will close itself off to eternity. The pharaoh has the solution. The workers he gives the architect have had their tongues cut out. In exchange for their devotion, the slaves will accompany the architect and Khufu to the afterlife. No secret will pass their lips. How do we pass on a message in a world with impenetrable borders? And in turn, how do we determine its secure transmission? The codes we devise become useless at certain horizons. If the slave cannot speak, he cannot exchange. If a being from another land does not know our language, it cannot understand us. If a message is encrypted, one must also pass on the method to crack it. You are the only one who can never see yourself apart from your image. In the reflection of a mirror or the pigment of a photograph, you entertain yourself. Every gaze you cast is mediated by a looking apparatus, by an image you must stand alongside. The gaze welcomes itself as guest. The eye orders you to sit at its table, to share in the feast of one's own image. The image stands beside the real, all the while eating at its table, stealing morsels from the feast it enables. The image is not reality, but the image is the only gesture you have in the direction of reality. From the Greek paranous, he who suffers from paranoia has a mind beside itself. He is convinced that his partner conspires against him, a belief in turn organized by a conspiring mentality. I am confident that you are reading my mind, a position founded by my supposed reading of yours. The paranoid stand beside himself, a part beside itself as part, conspiring against the whole. Paranoia is a kind of paradox. From the Greek paradoxon, it stands beside the orthodox. Paige Dubois, in her book Torture and Truth, posits the human body as the primary node of information exchange. She recounts a tale in Herodotus's Histories. Histiaeus shaves the head of his most trusted slave and tattoos on his scalp a message urging his ally to revolt. Once the slave's hair grows back, he is sent on his mission. If captured, he is incapable of betraying his master. He does not know the message, nor could he understand it if he saw it. He merely knows to tell the receiver to shave his head upon arrival, a fact that could be hidden from any third party who attempted to intercept the message. This one extra layer of protection is an act of encoding, a sleight of hand in the trick of communication. The slave is the medium of transmission. His knowledge is the code necessary to decrypt the message, rather than the message itself. From the Greek parasitos, the parasite is a figure who feeds beside, an uninvited guest who eats at the host's table nonetheless. I display my feast openly, in order that my status be established to the community I consider myself a part. The world outside never ceases at its attempts to gain access to my table. Here I consider to offer them a seat, to share my feast. Here I cast a hand skyward, signalling my negation of their status as guest. The boundary between my feast and theirs is drawn. As the host, I set the conditions under which my body stands beside. My body is entire, but it is also part. I stand beside my community, a conglomerate of bodies, each themselves parts of a greater whole. The parasite inhabits the host, breaching the boundary of the body in order to organize a new ecosystem around their own distinct metabolism. The parasite feeds on the body of its host. Some parasites alter their host's body chemistry, perhaps effecting a biological shift from male to female, from alpha to drone, so that the parasite's offspring have a better chance at survival. In order that the parasite enter the next stage of its life cycle, it is often unimportant that the host survives. If I was the master of the tattooed slave, and let's not believe for too long that this is my wish, I would extend Histiaeus' coding trick even further, sending the message on the scalp of a slave whose whole body has been tattooed, allowing the hair to grow over only the part of the body where the true message lies. In any system of exchange, noise has the greatest power to conceal, whether intentionally or not. Making full use of the medium of transmission is the mark of a truly uncrackable system. From the Greek paradigme, the paradigm is literally what shows itself beside. Parasite, paranoid, paradox constitutes a class of forms standing beside one another, each in relation to the whole. They constitute a paradigm that organizes the manner of their knowability. To overturn the paradigm, one must stand beside it, constituting a reordering of knowledge from the outside in. In 1972, NASA launched the Pioneer 10 probe into space. Its objective was to study the interplanetary and planetary magnetic fields, the atmosphere of Jupiter, and some of its satellites. Subjects that required a distant communication hub, a device cast further from the human body than any before it. After plotting its proposed trajectory through our solar system, NASA researchers noted that in a matter of a few decades, Pioneer 10 would become the first man-made object to pass the orbit of Pluto. It was decided that to make symbolic use of this opportunity, the probe should be fitted with a message, a way for an extraterrestrial civilization to retrace Pioneer's steps if ever one were to come across it. The resulting golden plaque, now streaming through the outer Oort cloud of our solar system, is one of the most anthropocentric objects ever created. As art historian Ernst Gomrich noted a few years after its launch, the multiple scales and symbolic indicators etched onto the plaque would be almost impossible for a true alien intelligence to decode. Alien minds encased in alien bodies wouldn't even be able to separate the code from the message. Welcoming the parasite to your table requires you to see your body as their body. At the feast we coalesce, my guest and I, overturning our differences through the manner of their knowability. True symbiosis stands beside invitation. True symbiosis is a politics aware of its own difference, a paradigm shown beside itself. In the 1940s, the Southwest Pacific Ocean became of fundamental strategic importance for both the Japanese and American forces. After establishing bases on a range of Melanesian and Micronesian islands, the US military settled into the routines of war. To the native people of these islands, the military presence signified a complete overturning of the natural order. Within a few months, the beaches and grasslands were transformed into encampments and runways. And as the war effort ensued, the skies above must have seemed filled with the buzz of alien craft. The native people came to know American society through the exchange of commodities and the gestures of an unknown tongue. As planes soared overhead and countless ships descended over the horizon, the islands became saturated with cargo of all kinds, from cans of Coca-Cola to livestock, the likeness of which the islanders had never seen. Much has been written of the so-called cargo cults which later emerged on these islands. Strange rituals still carried out today seem to hark back to those informative years when Western civilization first imposed itself on the native Micronesians. Islanders build imitation planes and runways from straw and dirt, act out military processions with bamboo guns slung over their shoulders. In order to bring back the abundance of cargo that used to land on their islands, the native people appear to be imitating the conditions under which its arrival used to occur. Ritual obtains a value at the meeting point between the thing imitated and the imitation enacted. Ritual is action, but it is also object. It is natural because it is always a copy, repeated whilst never truly touching the reality it resembles. For the tribal communities of the Cargo Islands, the dividing line between nature and ritual, between alien technology and the routines of war, must have seemed identical. A resemblance, a dividing line, that was worthy of imitation whether it brought cargo or not. We cannot know what they saw. We can only imitate an idea of their seeing by analogy with the kind of seeing we consider in ourselves. These are the figures set beside each other, the host and the guest, the mind and its image, the belief and its own antithesis. But these are also a series of relations, figured by a paradigm. It may well seem natural to consider the host and the guest, the mind and its image. Indeed, the words come in pairs, set side by side on the printed page, or expressed as isolated figures of breath by the speaking subject. Once the relation is figured, it becomes difficult to consider the isolated, the individual in opposition. After all, biological evolution has shown countless times, again and again, that an uninvited guest can become an accomplice, that a parasitic burden can become a treasured constituent of one's own body. Parasitism is often indistinguishable from symbiosis. To diffuse one's paranoia, it is necessary to stand outside oneself, to place one's state of mind beside itself as paradox, to break the condition of division. The architect and the silenced slaves make their way to the centre of the Great Pyramid, carrying the body of Pharaoh Khufu as they descend. As the labyrinth clamps shut behind them, a code designed to wipe out all evidence of itself as the catacombs collapse, one question looms large. What exactly were the riches the architect and his companions worked so hard to protect?